twisting the night away. They're twisting, twisting. Everybody's feeling great. They're twisting, twisting. They're twisting the night away.
Here's a oh yeah, a little bit of Sam Cooke for you there.
How he got here, I don't know.
He was a great singer.
Man, you ought to see him
back in the 60s and 50s, Sam Cooke. He had a church background. He sang in his, I think, in his father's church. That's where he developed a wonderful voice. He had the voice of an angel, in a way. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy. It's a crisp, sunny day in Tampa Bay. In fact, I think I heard there was snow in Buffalo today, of all things. In April? Snow? Indeed. And it's Friday, April the 2nd. Yeah, yes, I agree. It's also Good Friday. It is also Good Friday, and we want to pay our respects to all of our Christian friends around the country and the world, frankly, that are listening in. Big Catholic holiday, of course, and we've got Easter Sunday coming up, so you know all about that. So we've got a wonderful weekend in store. We're going to be talking in a few minutes with Wen Fa. Wen Fa, he's from the Pacific Legal Foundation, and we're going to talk about how many prominent school leaders in our country express their outrage over these latest attacks on Asian Americans while discriminating against them in the classroom. Kind of a double standard. We're going to talk about that. And while President Biden touts his so-called infrastructure package as a way to fix our roads and bridges, less than half the money is going to infrastructure. Less than half. We're going to talk about that. We're going to also talk about defunding police departments, what they've done to some of our major cities. We're going to take a look at the crime rise in certain major cities since these defunding practices began, with the proprietor of the barber pole himself, the very legendary Andrew Ceresi. So stay tuned for that. And we dust off our two-minute warning segment, bring it back this morning. We are going to discuss apathy, the deadliest sin. So stay tuned for that. And in our ultimate top 10, a goodie, the top 10 longest-serving U.S. governors. So lots in store. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They are open Tuesdays through Saturdays, 8:30 to 5 on weekdays, 8:30 to 2 on Saturday. You got to call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. And also while we're talking and plugging and endorsing, don't forget Good Morning Clearwater, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m. here on the Tantalk Radio Network. They precede our show. They prepare. They're like the opening act. Let's be honest. They're the opening act for good Freedom Works. Paul and Tracy Allen, they're wonderful. They will give you and start off your day with the latest in news and entertainment and sports, all good things. Anyway, we got a lot to talk about. By the way, the good news is that despite Joe Biden in the White House, the latest labor market recovery information is positive. Employers added 916,000 jobs in March. And the gains from the previous month, from February, were revised upward to 468,000 jobs. The unemployment rate ticked down to 6%. That's the lowest since the virus caused many businesses to at least temporarily shut down. By the way, the unemployment rate during the virus, it peaked at 14.7%. Did you know that? At its worst, 14.7%. That was back a year ago. 14.7. Yes, indeed. We've been battling this pandemic now for well over a year. Now, despite the gains, the U.S. economy had 8.4 million fewer jobs than it did before the pandemic. So we've still got to climb up on the number of jobs. I'm wondering if Biden understands any of this, with some of these policies that he's trying to introduce. I mean, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later as well, but this infrastructure bill, $2 trillion infrastructure bill, with, you know how much is really for roads and bridges, by the way? Just the roads and bridges. You know how much of the $2 trillion is? 6%. 6% is for roads and bridges. Biden's spending plan, being promoted largely as a bill to address infrastructure, directs well under half of its total money to things traditionally defined as infrastructure. The analysis is based on the 25-page summary of his proposal. It's called the American Jobs Plan, right? Where have we heard the jobs plan theory recently before? How about Obama? Remember the shovel-ready jobs we were going to have? Do you remember that? They weren't ready. We sent out this money across the country through the Washington bureaucracy, and it goes into these local and state coffers. It isn't used for shovel-ready jobs. Never was. Do you think that when they send out $2 trillion, that it's really going to go to the things that Biden was talking about? Really? Do you think that's true? Just think it through sometime, this whole concept. The White House casting a very wide net about what they call infrastructure. For example, did you know that there is care infrastructure? It's like nursing home care. They're calling it care infrastructure. That's $25 billion in care infrastructure to upgrade child care facilities. What's that got to do with infrastructure? Do you see how they mislabel this thing? I guess they think people, and most people don't read into it. They just, oh, all right. You know, Joe Biden is big on infrastructure. Good for him. You know, that's what, it's so crazy. So here's Mitch McConnell, who's now the minority leader in the Senate, Republican. He says, this plan is not about rebuilding America's backbone. Less than 6% of this massive proposal goes to roads and bridges. It would spend more money just on electric cars than on roads, bridges, ports, airports, and waterways combined. Did you hear that? More on electric cars than all the real infrastructure combined. So let's not kid ourselves, all right, about this. Here's an example. $400 billion for home-based care for the elderly and disabled. $400 billion. $35 billion for climate change-related research and development. Oh, is that infrastructure now? $50 billion at the National Science Foundation. $50 billion for new Commerce Department new Commerce Department office $50 million for a new Commerce Department office. Okay, so that's now infrastructure. And $213 billion for home sustainability and public housing. So don't call it an infrastructure bill. Call it a goodies bag, because that's what it really is. And we'll talk about that a little bit more later. Anyway, let us take our break. When we come back, Wen Fa will be with us. We're going to talk about school discrimination against Asian Americans.
If you knew Peggy Sue, then you know why I feel blue without Peggy. My Peggy Sue.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Remember those great songs from the 50s, 60s, and 70s? Well, then don't miss JT's Oldies But Goodies, Saturdays from 1 to 2 p.m. JT will be playing the greatest hits as well as the forgotten oldies. These records are sure to bring back memories, so tune in and reminisce with JT's Oldies But Goodies, playing songs from three great decades, Saturdays from 1 to 2 p.m., right here on Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready. Now go, cat, go, but don't you step on my blue suede shoes.
We are back, and delighted to have back Wen Fah. He is a Pacific Legal Foundation attorney, and we're going to talk a little bit about what he calls empty words from schools when it comes to Asians and Asian Americans. And he talks a little bit about, of course, the murders in Atlanta last week that were horrific, and how certain schools like Harvard, their president, and the Virginia Fairfax County Public Schools, they talk about, all of this Asian American discrimination or hate. And yet, when it comes to their own admission policies, that's quite a different story. Welcome back, and tell us a little bit about this kind of double standard with certain schools.
Yeah, certainly. So this is something that I've actually testified to Congress about recently and written an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal about, and that's the fact that many schools, in the wake of the Asian American discrimination that's been going on, have expressed solidarity with the Asian American community and with Asian Americans across the country. But unfortunately, many of those schools actually have discriminated against Asian American students and continue to discriminate against Asian American students in admissions. And sometimes that discrimination is accompanied by the very sort of verbal statements and animosity that the schools condemn, and we think that's wrong.
Right, indeed. And I should have credited you, because indeed you did put this piece in the Wall Street Journal on March the 25th, about a week ago. Let's be honest, Asian Americans do well when it comes to working hard. There is their culture of hard work. They strive to do well. They do very well overall in terms of, if you want to compare them to any other group when it comes to schooling. And yet there's this discrimination. They actually are not fairly represented in a lot of schools in this country. There's almost a reverse discrimination, right?
Well, I mean, I really don't like the word reverse discrimination.
Okay.
I don't see any difference in discrimination against anybody on the
right.
basis of race. Discrimination is discrimination.
Right.
I really hesitate to, also talk about it in terms of groups. But when we talk about overrepresentation, underrepresentation, I don't think we should be looking at groups in total. We should be looking at the individuals and whether or not they're being discriminated against. So, for example, if a school uses a standardized test and admits everybody with a perfect standardized test score, but everybody who scores, but there are people who have a perfect score and get denied, then we should be looking to see if those people are all of a certain race, if they're all Asian or any race, we should really investigate whether the school is behaving in a discriminatory way. I think one of the really great things about America is that we are judged as individuals. It promotes this notion of individual rights. We are judged according to our individual achievements, abilities, and aspirations, and not everybody has the same achievements, abilities, and aspirations. And we should all be judged as individuals. No school should say that, you have different opportunities from someone else just because of your race.
Exactly. And that is the perfect answer. Individualized. We talk about that here on Freedom Works all the time. grouping people is the worst thing you can do, because that's where turmoil and trouble, you know, begin. And I agree with you on that. But there seems to be, in an attempt perhaps to boost other groups, there seems to be certain groups that are not being boosted. It's an unfair race. And you talk about it in this report. So there is something going on, correct?
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, a lot of these schools, they want diversity and they want racial balance. You know, they see a problem with every single statistical disparity out there. I just don't think that's a very nuanced look. I think in some cases, sure, a statistical disparity can be a starting point for trying to uncover discrimination. And, you know, there are systems, I think there are a lot of government regulations that frankly entrench the effects of past discrimination. When you talk about licensing laws and occupational and barriers to entrepreneurship that block new entrants from entering the marketplace, I think that sure as heck entrenches past discrimination to some degree. But when you talk about other statistical disparities, you know, that can be the result of many things. That can be, you know, a difference simply in the aspiration of different people. You know, you can have different people. You know, I have different career aspirations than anybody of any race. You know, like we all have our different sort of skill sets or different sorts of strengths and weaknesses and different wants and, you know, goals in life. And that's a good thing. That shouldn't be viewed as a negative. But unfortunately, many schools across the country are viewing it that way.
Indeed. And you bring up Fairfax County, and it touches somewhat close to home. And you talk about a particular family that had left China and come to the United States, and their eldest daughter and her sister, et cetera. Tell us a little bit about that that situation in Fairfax County's school system.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's Thomas Jefferson High School. That's one of the elite public schools in the entire country. And that's a school that a lot of people, you know, dream of getting their children into. And we represent a group of families, including Dr. Chen, who you just mentioned. He's a Chinese immigrant, professor, came to the United States to further his education. Professor teaches the students, you know, discrimination is wrong, don't discriminate. But when it comes to his daughters, one of them goes to TJ. The other one might not get the chance because the school has thought there was a problem with too many Asian Americans.
Too many.
So,
too many Asian Americans in school. Now, what is going on with their thinking? What is going on with their thinking on that one?
Well, I think it's sort of this crude lumping of individuals into racial categories. And I just, you know, I think it's a perfect opportunity for me to talk about another thing that's wrong with these sorts of racial categories is that, you know, when you look at the actual number of Asian Americans in Fairfax County at Thomas Jefferson High School, it's actually, you know, it's a group of individuals, and it's actually a group of individuals from over 30 countries. You know, you have Indian Americans, Pakistani Americans, Chinese Americans, Vietnamese Americans, over 30 different countries, and Fairfax County is all lumping them all into one giant group and then saying that there are too many Asians and changing the admissions process to rig it against Asian American students who want to go to that school.
What is the sense behind it?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of talk these days about equity and inclusion and diversity. And, you know,
Again, it's to boost other groups.
Yeah, so this goes to something that Justice Thomas said 20 years ago in a Supreme Court opinion.
Clarence Thomas.
A lot of times when these schools talk about inclusion, there's always people who get left out. And in these cases, it's a lot of people like, you know, Dr. Chen's younger daughter, and many other Asian American families who have, you know, dreamed about attending Thomas Jefferson and now will never get that chance.
Right.
You know, I like I said earlier, I do think that you know, there are things that governments can do to make sure that, you know, government regulations aren't standing in the way, aren't serving as a barrier to opportunity. I think there are a lot of, you know, licensing regimes there's a lot of, you know, I think there's a lot of over-criminalization in this country. You know, I think there's a lot of things that the government can do to remove their own barriers, and I think that would be the best place to start. They should not start by discriminating on the basis of race in schools.
We're talking with Wen Fa. He is an attorney for the Pacific Legal Foundation, and he has penned a piece in the Wall Street Journal. Schools offer empty words to Asians. And, of course, the backdrop for this right now are those horrible killings of some Asian American women in Atlanta. And now we had one in New York, not a killing, but an attack on an elderly Asian woman walking the streets of New York. It was caught on tape. When do you see, I hate to talk about it this way, but do you see any kind of uptick because of maybe the China virus? Or is there anything to do with China that's prompting some of this? Or is it just coincidental or a combination of both? Or what do you think?
Well, you know, I just don't know. I don't think we know enough about the atrocities that have been committed in the past few weeks. You know, obviously, I think those acts are absolutely terrible. I hope the perpetrators are caught and, you know, investigated. And, you know, if they're found guilty, then I think they should be prosecuted to the fullest extent allowed by law. You know, I think those are the role of government is to protect individual rights, you know, right to life and property and liberty. And, you know, it's just terrible that you have people being assaulted and murdered. You know, all across America. So I think there should really be a serious effort to track down the perpetrators. And again, my heart just goes out.
Of course. Of course. Do you, and this is a little bit off the direct topic, but hate crime in general. I've always wondered about that, adding a federal hate crime. I mean, killing somebody to me is a hate crime to begin with. And you don't have to look for underlying reasons. The person that you killed is dead. And you should be prosecuted for that. But to add something on the federal level, and not only did you kill this person, but this person was, you killed him because of a hate of that person's race. Well, first of all, you never can tell what somebody is thinking when they do something like that. But I've always wondered about that. I think it complicates things. What may I get your thought on that?
I mean, I think, you know, I struggle to think of an instance where there's a murder that wasn't caused by hate. You know,
right.
When you talk about different killings, you know, they're always motivated by hate. You know, I don't think we should be talking about, you know, I think we should be stringent in, you know, prosecuting any sort of murders and assaults and things of that sort. It shouldn't depend on the perpetrator's race or the victim's race.
Right.
You know, I'm against this general sort of race-based thinking. I think people should be treated as individuals, and what's wrong is wrong. It doesn't matter what the race of the perpetrator is. It doesn't matter what the race of the victim is. It's always wrong to murder someone. Murdering is wrong. Violence is wrong. We should condemn it in all of its forms.
I agree. Well said, Wen. Delighted to have you back with us. Always a pleasure to talk with you. I know we'll talk again soon.
All right, thank you so much. Great to be on.
All right, Wen. Wen Fa, Pacific Legal Foundation.
You know, on that, I wanted to ask him.
Oh. I don't know if he's still there or not.
No, he's gone.
Okay.
The incident with the woman getting beaten by
New York.
In New York.
Yeah.
Now, that guy was out on parole for killing his mother.
Yes.
His words were, "You don't belong here." But she was in a predominantly black neighborhood.
Okay.
And I think because of skin color, that was, you know.
Yeah.
And then if you throw in the Atlanta thing, you know, the assailant that did that even came out and said it wasn't about race. It was about the fact that I had a problem with the sex thing going on in there and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But yet the media keeps painting it. And I was just wondering if he thought so, too, if the media was painting it or overpainting something like that as a hate crime.
Well, I think the answer is yes. And, yeah, I can't speak for Wen. I think, you know, he makes the right point. You kill somebody,
sure.
You attack somebody, you stomp on their head.
Yeah.
There's something going on in your mind that's kind of hateful. Well,
like I said, that guy was out on parole for killing his mother.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's a crazy person to be, you know, he's a sick man.
Right. Yeah.
He's a sick. So now, and this is what, this is so insidious, this whole thing. If it had been a white man doing it, the attention would have been blown up 10 times what it is. But it's a black man that did it to an Asian. So that doesn't fit in the liberal media's playbook, okay? So that's part of it, too. So we've got all of that. So see what it does, though? We're picking out colors of people that are hurting each other. What a world we have turned into with that kind of thing. Anyway, let us take our break. When we come back, the proprietor of the Barber Paul, I'm sure he's got some things to say about the Joe Biden infrastructure package. And also what defunding police departments have been doing to some major cities.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi, I'm Paul Allen.
And I'm Tracy Allen.
Please join us every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
You can also watch us on Facebook Live on our Good Morning Clearwater Facebook page and on YouTube. Just search Tantalk Radio Network.
Every morning we'll be talking about current events, sports.
Yay, sports.
News, entertainment, weather, and traffic. Have an opinion? You can call us.
That's right. Join us every weekday morning, 8 a.m. till 10 a.m. on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on this Good Friday. I see. You ever see people that was walking around with a little ash on their little ashes on their forehead?
Yeah, I always go up with a wet napkin and try to get it off.
Oh, don't say that. You're a sacrilegious man, you know. right now, cities in parts of the U.S. that slashed funding for their police, not so good. Los Angeles, Minneapolis, New York, Portland, Austin, Texas, of course, have shifted funds from the police department to social service programs. Listen to this. In Minneapolis, violent crime rates surged in 2020 after the death of George Floyd. Between December, this past December, and March, the end of last month, the murders in that city have risen 46%. That's from 13 to 19 during the same period a year earlier. In Portland, records show that murders more than tripled year over year. Remember all the trouble they were having there. Police stats from last July when the city's budget cuts were made, and this past February, the most recent data available, homicide skyrocketed 271%. Murders in New York up 11.8%. In L.A., 38% increase in murders. In 2020. I think you get the picture. Andrew, you think this is an... I know the answer, but I want to hear you say it. Do you think funding cuts in these cities have helped make the cities safer?
You know, Paul, there's an old saying, when the cat's away, the mice will play.
Correct.
Okay, it's very simple. Listen.
That's right.
They're defunding anything that's important and funding anything that
is trivial.
Yeah, I mean, let's be real. You just recited Biden's infrastructure plan
right.
a while ago. It was a joke, and it is a joke.
It is a joke.
Infrastructure is supposed to be for sewerage, drainage, water supply, transportation. You know what I'm saying?
I certainly do.
Not for wheelchairs in a nursing home. He might have that confused for transportation. I don't know.
I think he has.
You know, but listen, these guys are over the wall. I'm just hoping that the Republicans all stick together when it comes to them, and I guess they can walk out or something.
Yes. I don't know if they would do that, but they could get up and walk out. Then they wouldn't have a quorum.
That's it. I mean, they got to get McCluskey there and Collins and Romney. If they all stick together, but, you know, they're schmucks, so we don't know what's going to happen.
Well, one of the Democrats in the Senate, Joe Manchin from West Virginia, might not like this infrastructure plan too much either. So, you know, all they need is to lose. All they have to do is lose one in the Senate, at least lose one Democrat, and they're in hot water.
But how many times have you heard Senator Manchin say he doesn't agree with what the Democrats are doing, but when it comes time to vote for them anyway?
He's a slippery one.
I mean, it happens every time.
It does happen.
Matter of fact, I can't recall. Can you recall something he voted on with the Republicans?
Here's the thing, and this gets a little complicated, but technically, they're going to have to call on the parliamentarian in the Senate to determine whether or not this package would need either 60 votes or 51 votes to pass. Because technically, you need to have a vote to bring it to the attention of the Senate. You know what I mean? And then you have the vote on it. So if you don't get the 60, you need 60 votes to bring a matter up for a vote. And if you don't get that 60 votes, then it doesn't come up in the Senate. So that's the Republicans' shot at keeping this nonsense from becoming law. The parliamentarian in the Senate has to make the decision.
Well, they better find who the parliamentarian is and get his head straightened up.
Well, he's usually a pretty straight shooter, and I'm not sure what the name is. He's under tremendous pressure.
How many straight shooters do we have?
see, the other thing is called reconciliation. They have somehow figured out a way that if you can label a bill as a reconciliation bill, you don't need 60 votes to get it to the floor for a vote. You can go right to the floor and make a vote, and you'd only need 51 votes to pass it.
Boy, I think we need to do something with our government. Sounds to me like there's more red tape
there is.
To go through to get something done.
Correct.
And anything, you know, they get nothing done that's for the good of the country, but they get everything done that's for the crap with this country.
Yep.
I don't understand it.
You that's know? Right.
I think the only way to save this country is to get all us immigrants to go back where the hell we came from.
Okay.
Leave it all to the Indians, man, because they were right.
I think in a way you're right.
This country, and we're doing a hell of a job.
So you're going to go back to Italy. I got to go back to Canada, then maybe get on a boat and go back to Ireland.
Where the hell we came from. And give it to the Indians and say, man, we've done enough. You guys were right. Okay.
Yes.
Look at what they got going on with Congressman Getz now, huh?
Tell us about it.
Well, they're saying that he smuggled a 17-year-old with him somewhere.
Okay, Matthew Getz, the Florida Republican.
God, here we go again.
The Florida Republican.
For the more women thing. What is this?
I have no idea.
Start prosecuting these people to put these people through what they put them through. I mean, they're coming after Getz, but did you notice, huh? They forgot about Andrew Cuomo.
Of course.
Don't touch about him no more, do you?
No. Now, so just so we can, this guy, Matthew Getz, is a Florida congressman, and supposedly, did he transport a 17-year-old girl across a state line? Is that it?
Yeah,
Ed, you know something about that? I think he did.
Yeah. First of all, he likes to be called Gates.
Oh, okay.
Gates.
Gates Getz.
And there are certain left shows that did discuss it for about 8 seconds. That was all. I'm talking about Cuomo. that is, you know,
oh, Cuomo,
was, yeah,
yeah.
wasn't really that bad. Now let's talk about Gates.
Of course, Gates is gonna is gonna be the soup du jour, or whatever you call it, a salad du jour, or whatever. But has he denied that he had a relationship with a 17-year-old?
Well, he came out and said,
that's the main thing.
Listen, I'll give you my appointments and my dates where I was, and you I'll dispute anything you have to
say. I know that there's all kinds of intrigue around it. He's
being very forthcoming.
Okay. There's intrigue around. I think he said that she's not a 17-year-old girl, if I remember this right. But anyway, Andrew, go back to this. Obviously, there is a bias. They want to stop talking about Cuomo, much like they wanted to stop talking about Bill Clinton and talk about a Republican doing something like this.
You don't hear nothing about Sabal either, do you? Sleeping with the enemy. I mean, you know, Paul, enough of this stuff. What is getting done in this country besides it getting destroyed? Slowly but surely.
Yeah.
We're picking on this person. Let's get this person.
Right.
Nobody's doing nothing.
You're right.
Except Biden keeps sliding things in at nighttime. I'm not sure if this one is true, but I heard that he already split a few billion dollars for the tuition there for the college students to be paid off, student loans.
They want to pay off student loans. One of the things in the playbook, in the Democratic playbook, is to start writing off the loans that the students have accumulated, the debt they've accumulated. Just write it off. Of course, the taxpayer, someone's going to pay, so the taxpayers pick that up.
Yeah, they want to keep the younger votes.
It's illegal. I thought
of course it's illegal. Right. They don't have any right to do that.
I mean, they're sitting there bribing these people to vote for them.
Yeah, well, first of all, what Biden is doing and the Democrats are trying to do are unconstitutional. You can take them to court for doing things like this. Just saying, I'm going to pass an executive order. And I'm going to, you know, do this, and I'm going to do... No, you can't do that.
Listen, what good is it taking anything to court? Look at what the Supreme Court did with Hillary Clinton. She was supposed to testify about her emails. No, she don't have to. You can't go to the Supreme Court. Where are you going to go, Paul?
I don't know. I actually don't know. Do you go to the court in The Hague? In the Netherlands? Hey, our Supreme Court's not working.
Not working?
You know...
The whole government is not working.
No, it's very frustrating. I'm going to be...
Infrastructure replacing our government.
I'm going to be talking about that in our two-minute warning program, about apathy and the whole unconstitutional nature of what we're doing right now and how people are not doing anything about it. And apathy being the deadliest of sins because we aren't.
Anyway, you know, Paul, I want to give a shout-out to my old friend Jim Bennett, who's the gentleman I take care of.
Okay.
I think he's finally listening to our show today because he doesn't like to get involved with politics, but he got a new radio yesterday.
Oh!
He wanted me to put it on the channel where the show is because he wanted to listen to us.
So hey, Jim!
Shout out.
We were delighted to have another listener, and Jim Bennett, tell us, Jim is, a friend, a customer, both? What is it?
He's family now. We kind of adopted him.
Okay.
And he's a great guy. He's a 30-year Air Force veteran. He's a master sergeant. Took care of us when we were young. Protected us, you know.
Oh, God bless him.
Yes, he is a great man.
We salute him. That's wonderful.
Yes, you know what? He's a Trump fan, too. He's very disappointed of what's going on in this country today with Biden. He just sits there and shakes his head. I mean, here's these guys risk their life for us, and they see them putting our country in danger again. It's disgusting.
Yes. Well, tell him, and if he's listening, we agree with that.
Yeah.
And we're very worried about it. And we're going to, you know, that's one of the reasons we do this show. Because, really, because of the way we have disregarded our Constitution and allowed, I don't know, the acidic nature of socialism and, you know, all of that. Go ahead.
The America was a melting pot, and apparently melting pots don't work, Paul.
They used to.
We're living proof. Well, they used to. I don't know what's happening here, because when we were growing up, no matter where we came from, we were all American.
That's correct. That's exactly what made this country great.
No.
People from all over the place that came in here, they didn't worry about the color of skin or the ancestry. That, you know, they came here to do well. They knew that they had freedom to do it in this country. and they didn't have it where they were coming from. That was the whole, that's what made our country the beacon of the world.
Now they're trying to turn this into a small Europe. Here's the country of Puerto Rico, the country of Italy, the country of Africa, the country of Asia. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
To be American. Forget where the hell you came from. You are American.
Exactly.
If you're not American, go back where you came from.
Exactly. It was the melting pot. And that was that's what made our country great. It's what can continue to make our country great if we would only allow it, you know? Only allow it.
I don't understand what's going on. All I know is this hate's being fed by somewhere, and
that's
I can
true.
Tell you it's not from me.
Hey, Andrew, I'm a little disappointed in you. I understand our great Governor DeSantis was in town to Palm Harbor yesterday, which means if he was in Palm Harbor, I'm sure he stopped by and see Mom and Pop, who live about 78 feet from your shop.
That was,
when's he gonna stop in for a photo op?
That was on Wednesday. He was in Palm Harbor.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He's supposed to be coming here next week into Dunedin to dedicate some kind of building that's going on.
Okay. Did you send him an invite or what?
Oh, yes, we did.
Okay.
We sent him an invite.
Well, I'll be there for that. Let us know. We'll stop in.
There you go.
I'll let you know. It'll be a surprise when he does. I talked to Pop the other day, you know, and I says, what is this? He goes to Palm Harbor. He don't come by and say,
yeah.
And he says, well, he goes, you know, he's getting his hair cut. He has some woman come in that takes care of his and his son up at the mansion. I says, it looks like he's getting it cut at Fantastic Stamps, so he needs to go to the right place.
Okay, so I got to ask you this, Andrew. Have you ever cut the hair of Ron DeSantis?
Which one?
The governor!
When he was 6 years old.
Okay,
really?
You did. Did you really? Okay.
Boy.
Now, you have been cutting his father's hair, correct?
35 years.
Oh, right.
See, that'd be a great photo op, especially for him.
Yeah.
You know, giving back to the businesses, you know, in Florida and get his hair cut and from a guy that...
We get a picture like that taken in the shop, I'm going to have to autograph it and give it to Ron.
Oh, that'd be great. That would be so good. As always, Andrew, thank you so much, my friend. We'll be talking on Monday. And by the way, happy Easter to you.
Happy Easter to you guys, too. With the Lord's resurrection, maybe this country will resurrect, too.
Well, let's hope so. All
right, guys. Have a good weekend.
All right. Bless you. Andrew the Master Barber. We're going to take our break. A short one, by the way. A short one. And when we come back... Apathy, the deadliest sin.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back for our final segment. By the way, I want to remind you that if you cannot listen to us live, you have the pleasure and the opportunity to listen to us on podcast because Big Ed sets up every show on our website. And our website is OurFreedomWorks.com. O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. We are very appreciative to Ed for doing that. He does it every day for us and sets it up so that you know who the guest is in the top 10. And by the way, on the website, if you go there, you'll always know who the upcoming guest is because we put it on there as well. All right. We are dusting off our two-minute warning, and we are discussing on it the deadliest sin of all, apathy. Now, for those of us who remember our catechism classes, there were seven deadly sins, right? There was pride, covetousness, lust, anger, gluttony, envy, and sloth. Those were the seven deadly sins. Remember that from my grammar school. But the deadliest of them all is not even listed. Apathy. Apathy not only destroys an individual's soul, apathy can destroy an entire culture, an entire society. Had there been apathy, for instance, in Europe, America would never have been discovered, right? Spain, Portugal, Columbus, remember all of that? That involved, you know, Italy, Spain, Portugal, all those kinds. Exploring? Had there been apathy in the colonies, the United States would not have become an independent country. Had we just let the British continue and the French and the southern portion, the whole bit, right? And now, that country is teetering on the brink of losing its soul. The linchpin of the United States, its constitution, is being systematically shredded by a culture of ignorance, division, selfishness, envy, and most importantly, apathy, doing nothing. What made our country the beacon of the world was its initial decision to keep the reins of power away from the few and in the hands of the many. Our country's founders experienced the results of top-down government under British monarchical rule with King George. They knew what it was like. They formulated our founding document with the philosophy that local and state governing was to supersede any federal control, any top-down control. The citizens themselves would be one short step from their representatives with state and local control, and one short step from those with the greatest control over their lives in government. But depression and wars, they all played a major hand in the local governments allowing the federal government to begin a power grab. The Civil War, as an example, wrested a large portion of states' rights away because of the slavery issue. Now, the slavery issue, that was a very noble issue for the federal government indeed. But nevertheless, it was a turning point toward more federal control. Then in 1913, the federal income tax was established. That was more federal control. And the Federal Reserve was established in 1913. Again, more federal control. Two huge federal power grabs. Then in 1929, the stock market crashed, right? So the Roosevelt administration, under the guise of rescuing us from ourselves, created a host of federal welfare programs that dramatically increased federal power. I mean, the Social Security program captured a percentage of people's money, brought it to Washington to be sent back out in increments to older people. Then the Lyndon Johnson Great Society of the 60s. Another power grab. Huge welfare state for those deemed to be too poor and too incompetent to fend for themselves, as well as the takeover of the healthcare industry for the elderly and those same poor souls in the welfare state. Another power grab, right? So now the federal government is attempting to fund and control our educational system, our infrastructure, and our environment, and doing so by unconstitutionally taking those responsibilities away from our state and local governments. And our apathy is letting them get away with it. Okay. Before we go to our top 10, Ed, I wanted to quickly say that I was watching a part of the opening day game between, I think it was the Tampa Bay Rays and in Miami. In fact, I don't even know who won the game.
Well, that was boring. Would you fall asleep?
I actually boring. Changed the channel. It was kind of boring.
The Rays won on a solo home run by, God.
Okay.
Geez, whatever.
They won the game, though,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, they did win.
Okay. That gets us excited, does it not? Okay, also, I know you don't care about it, but I got to mention it. We have the Final Four in college basketball coming mm-hmm. up. It's going to be between Houston versus Baylor and Gonzaga versus UCLA. Do you care one fig?
I just care when it's over.
Okay. Okay.
And the Lightning won last night. They broke their three-game losing streak.
Oh, they did. I didn't know they
played. I actually tuned in when it was 2-1 in the six minutes left in the third period. I was watching for about a minute. They scored and tied it. 10 seconds later, they scored another one. I was like, boys, what was the problem? You just needed me to tune in?
I couldn't find it on the TV. What channel? Wasn't on.
You know, it might have been on 30. On a 30.
It wasn't on Sports Sun or whatever.
It's the other one. It was
on maybe the NBC Sports.
No, it was on the Bally, but there's two of them. There's a South Florida one.
Oh, I gotta look that one up. Okay.
If you got Spectrum, it's channel 39.
39. Thank you, sir. Thank you. All right, time for our top 10. Ed, quickly over to the drums. Top 10 longest serving U.S. governors. Here we go. Number 10. Jerry Brown of California. Remember Jerry Brown of California? Yeah. He served for 5,259 days starting in 1975. Number 9. Do you know Nelson Rockefeller? Do you remember that name?
The name, yeah.
New York governor from 1959 to 1973. Number 8. Albert Ritchie. I don't remember. Well, nobody would remember him. 1920 to 1935. 15 years. He's governor of Maryland. He was a Democrat. Number 7, Arthur Fenner. He was the anti-Fed party from 1790 to 1805. Wow. Number 6, Edwin Edwards. He was Louisiana governor from 1972 to 80, 84 to 88, 92 to 96. Number 4, Jim Hunt. North Carolina, Democrat, 1977 to 85, and then again from 1993 to 2001. Let's see here. He was tied, by the way, with the next guy, number 4. Jim Rhodes of Ohio, Republican, 63 to 71, 75 to 83. Number 3, George Wallace. You've heard of him, right? Alabama governor, Democrat, 63 to 67. 71 to 79, 83 to 87. Number 2, Bill Janklow, South Dakota, 79 to 87, and 95 to 2003. All right, Ed, I know you don't know who it is. I wouldn't either. You want to name a state you think that the governor came from for number 1?
Let's see. Let's go with Texas.
Not far away.
Okay.
Not terribly far away. Got to go a little north. Mm. Iowa. Terry Branstad, Republican. He served 8,169 days, far surpassing the guy in second place, by the way. He served from 83 to 1999, and then again from 2011 to 2017. So, that was the longest. I'm looking here to see who was the longest serving Florida governor. And I guess because of term limits, I'm going all the way down the list here. He doesn't even make the top 50. So we don't have a Florida. I guess they can only serve 8 years here, and it's been that way for a while.
Yeah, there's
right?
a term limit, isn't there?
Yes, there is term limits. Okay. All right, my friends. You have a wonderful Easter. This is Good Friday. Think about that as well. We shall join you again on Monday. And always remember, freedom works. Yeah.